Have you heard about the new MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle? The MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle is the easiest, most advanced nozzle ever, protecting you from the dangers of diesel exhaust fumes. With its patented flex magnet technology, the Pro Nozzle easily attaches with one hand from a standing position, can snap on from any angle, and fits flush to the apparatus, saving a ton of space. And MagnaGrip is the only exhaust removal system that offers a true 100% seal. For free grant assistance and to learn more, go to MagnaGrip.com.
This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. This is Chris Bednarik, your Public Information and Trustee Chair for Fools International. I'd like to welcome you to our June 20th episode of Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. I haven't done this in a really long time, taking over for Robbie Fisher and Rob Mitchell from their respective positions. We blended them together. So I have some pretty big shoes to fill to try to keep this rolling as smoothly as they did between the blog talk, the podcast, and all of our social media and website. On that note, if you have any events or anything that your chapter is doing out there, feel free to email them to me at pit@foolsinternational.com, and I'll do my best to get those shared out for you. We'll do what we can to help you folks out. This evening, we have a special guest, Lee Hollins from Suncoast Schools in Onica, Florida, and we have President Ben Flagel on the line. I'm going to bring them up here in just a second. Before we kick all this off, let's take just a moment to remember our fallen brothers in service in the fire service and military. All right, thanks. And without further ado, Ben, are you still there? Did I hit all the right buttons?
I am still here, Chris.
You're still here. All right, we're live. We're on the air. I don't know if you had any message specifically that you'd like to start off with before we jump in with Lee. But the floor is yours, sir.
Well, thank you, Chris, and thank you for tackling this job. We came up with your position title, and actually you came up with your position title, and the rest of us are still trying to figure out how to say it, but PIT is a great way to go. So if you can't remember all the social media titles that Chris carries and you want to talk with him or find the guy that does that. Do that. Ask for the PIT guy, and his email is pit@foolsinternational.com.
And Chris is doing a great job. It's not often in this job that we get to write our own job description, but I did my best.
That's right. And you know, Chris, I just want to say you're doing a fantastic job. And one of the things that we've been focusing on since I took over as president is to make a greater impact among the chapters as far as communication. And I personally, between the Facebook site messaging and our effort at FDIC and the Instagram and the things you're doing with social media, I think we're managing to see an uptick. And it's slow. It's hard work to get people to focus on us, and they've got so many other options. So what we have to deliver has to be worth their time. And we're also trying to each work a job or two. And so thank you for all you do. And I believe we have Lee on with us, and I'd like to dive into that.
for sure.
Yeah, you got it. I'm here.
All right, Lee. Chris, interject any questions you might have while we talk. I've got a few questions prepared that have been mulling around in my head, Lee, ever since we ran into each other at the, I think it's called the Tin Roof we were at in Indianapolis, one of the quasi-replacements for the Clotta at FDIC. And we ran into each other there.
Yeah, I think, I guess you guys were forced into finding a plan B that night. So I was glad to see you guys.
Yes, we were. We had to make some adjustments. And Dave Dabowski brought you over to me. I don't know if he knew that we had known each other, but I've known you at least over the web since I took over as secretary, if not before then, because you came up. And I believe your daughter-in-law came up to Alaska a few times, or at least once, and that's when we first met. And then as secretary, I began to realize where your place was in Suncoast Pools. And so it was at FDIC this time that you and I actually really got to talk in depth, and I realized what a wealth of knowledge you are, and I began to want to pick your brain. So I thought this was the perfect opportunity to do it, and better yet, we can share it with the fire service.
Well, I appreciate the invite to talk about things. As far as the pools, we're looking at almost 25 years that I've been involved. So been a lot occurred during those years, of course, good and bad. But, yeah, it was great to see all you guys and finally meet Dave. That's kind of a funny story how that all happened at the elevator there at the Hampton, that we could tell that story if you want. But, yeah, it was great to see all you guys. And then, we talked quite a bit and said we'd get on here and talk about the pools a little bit.
And we've actually pulled it off. That's the impressive part.
A problem here. I just got back from a weekend. I'm just sitting here looking at it. Beautiful North Georgia mountains, and what are you thinking? What do you want to hit up first?
Well, I was thinking the first thing I wanted to ask you is, can you? I know this might all run together in your effort to explain any individual question, and that's okay. We'll just kind of drift through this. But
sure.
When did you first join the Fools, and what brought you to join us?
Well, the exact dates are not there, but around 1998, I had been invited by Bill Manning, who was the editor of Fire Engineering Magazine, which I had been involved with in the mid-90s, early 90s. And then when Penwell, the parent company at the time to Fire Engineering, bought FDIC in 1996, Bill asked me to be on the executive advisory board. And so I was on the board to help plan that first FDIC under Penwell's leadership. And so we can talk about Andy a little bit, because that first year, Andy Fredericks and I had met him and we talked together. But to get to your question, so within that, the first FDIC Penwell show was 97. So either 97 or 98, I had been living in Florida for many years, my whole career. I moved to Florida from Jersey when I was 18. And so I had been in Florida, and then I met these guys at FDIC, which was all the founding members, Gilbert and Stallings and that crew and Walton, Redman and all them guys. So I think, as I recall, that's how I got involved, and they were telling me about this Fools organization and so forth, and I thought it was kind of a joke, as the name implies, and so I finally gave in and said, all right, man, I'll send you my $5 so you can buy a beer, and so I actually joined it. I officially got my card, I believe 1998 is the date on there, and it doesn't have a number on it. But in the in the master membership list that you guys keep. My number is 80, so it's pretty well back in the beginning, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was chatting it up with Mike Gilbert in Denver in 2019, and I thought I'd just be a smart aleck because I was a secretary, and I said, sir, do you have your card on you? I'd like to verify that you actually are a fool and can be here at the convention. And he whipped that sucker out fast. And you're right.
Believe it or not, Gilbert, I'm here in Blue Ridge, Georgia, all the way north. Gilbert just bought a place. He closed on it last week. It's like 12 miles from me. He's in Murphy, North Carolina. Yep. I think he's getting out of Florida, getting out of that heat, too many people. And I believe he's moving up here full time. But, yeah, he's only 12 miles away. We haven't gotten together yet. But, like I said, he just got up here. So, look forward to hanging with him up here in the mountains.
That's awesome. You have to tease him a bit for me. He's always saying he's going to ride his bike up to Alaska and come see me, but he hasn't done it yet.
As in his
motorcycle.
I told him I ride enduro bikes around here, and I sent him a picture of mine. I said, well, if you're moving up here, you're going to need one of these. He said, I do nothing but get hurt on them damn things. So,
let's talk about Andy, because that was when I really clued into how far back you went at FDIC. And I never had the privilege of meeting Andy, but I've read Little Drops of Water, and like everybody has, and I've been aware of Andy's role in the fire service for a very long time. I would love for our listeners to be able to hear the connection that you have with Andy as you remember him, if you're willing to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. For those that maybe don't know who Andy is, Andy was a FDNY firefighter. When I got hooked up with him through Bill Manning, at the time I was very much into pumper operations and had written some articles and so forth. And Andy was just starting to write about, nozzle operations and so forth. But Andy was a firefighter with 48 engine in the Bronx, and John Salka was his captain at the time. And so we got together via phone call for the first Penwell FDIC in 97 to plan out what we were going to do. We were going to do some hands-on, and I was going to take care of the pump and supply end of things, and Andy was going to take care of hose line work. So we spoke times on the phone, and then we got to FDIC that year, 97, and I got to meet Andy. Actually, we roomed together that week, and we just really hit it off. Grew up in Jersey, and he's just above the Jersey line. He lived up in Suffern, New York, which is just over the line. And so, yeah, we hit it off, and the hands-on training was actually in the parking lot of the convention center there in Indianapolis, right across from that minor league baseball stadium. The area now is part of the convention center, but it was a parking lot back then. And all the hot classes that first year for Penwell was in that parking lot, and it was pretty cool. But so that's how I met Andy, and hanging out at FDIC, I come up through a little department in Florida, Cedar Hammock Fire Rescue. At the time, we only had three stations. So, just a small town thing, which there's something to be said for that also. But, Andy and I hit it off, and he took me under his wing kind of, and introduced me to all his FDNY brothers. And I just really liked the whole brotherhood thing. And so he and I became good friends. And I could tell the story about Dave Dabowski if you want to hear that story about Andy.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah.
We won't. We didn't pre-warn Dave, so.
Let's see. So it was only about 6 or 8 months ago when Dennis Smith died. you know, Firehouse Magazine founder, and Angie Company 82 and other books he authored. And so
God bless him.
Yep, God bless him. He was a great dude. So he lived down there by us in Florida. He lived in Venice, and we're just up the road in Bradenton and Sarasota, as the Suncoast Fools kind of covers that whole region from south of Tampa on down. But so Dennis came to a couple of our meetings and spoke and signed books for people, and we have a 10-year anniversary coin at the time. And we had a member there that had – they were numbered coins. And the member, Nick Herlihy, had number 82 just by chance in his pocket. And so we gave Dennis Smith our 10-year anniversary with number 82 on it, which was pretty cool. But I had contacted Dave, who I didn't remember meeting Dave, and I didn't know who he was. And so I contacted Dave on email, and I wasn't sure if we had made Dennis Smith an honorary member of the Suncoast Fools, because whenever someone comes into our meetings and offers some training or helps us out, we typically make them an honorary member. And so Dave emailed me back, and he says Dennis is not on any of the rolls as a member of Suncoast Fools, or I don't think any other Fools chapter. He said, but I got a story to tell you. So this is a, you know, he typed this. This is an email. He said, in the late 90s, I was at FDIC, and in the afternoon between classes, most of the people were in classes, but he said, I cut out and I wanted to go have a beer. So he said, I walked up the road there towards the Hampton, and there was a place called Houlihan's, I think it was called. And he said, I walked in his Houlihan's place, and there was only a couple people at the bar. And he said it was these two firemen sitting at the bar. So I went up and I asked if they minded if I, you know, had a beer with them. And the two firemen said, yeah, no problem at all, you know. And Dave said it was you, and talking about me, he said it was me and Andy Fredericks is who it was. And so I thought that was a pretty cool story. He said we talked for an hour or so, and he just never forgot that time that he sat and talked with us for a while. And again, for those that are not aware, Andy was killed on 9/11. He was with Squad 18 at the time. So God bless Andy. He was a great dude, and that's one of my Andy stories. So,
what do you think? I mean, Andy is revered. I think we can all agree. By the general fire service at large. And what do you think his greatest contribution has been?
I would say his greatest contribution to the fire service was to get people to really take a look at the nozzles they're using. And he contributed greatly to opening a lot of people's eyes on the proper nozzle that certain fires require, and gallonages and so forth, and just the nozzle man work. That certainly is Andy, is the nozzle man. So I think he opened a lot of people's eyes with the little drops of water, comparing the fog with solid streams, and making sure people understood that there's a difference between a straight stream and a solid stream. And so that's what I think.
And I think you're right. I kind of had my own ideas, but you've definitely confirmed my opinion on that. I know many people have contributed, and UL has gone through and taken a strong look at Andy's work and tested their own results. When I came in the fire service in the early 90s, I remember the smoothbore tips in the rear compartment of the engine, and we never pulled them out ever. And they were hard, heavy brass. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no discussion about the combo tip other than what its friction loss was, and mm-hmm. no briefing on how to use it or how it was best employed. I personally find that you can use either tip to achieve results, but definitely one tip is better than the other in certain fires. And it is such an incredible thing that Andy did to, you know, being that he was not an officer, he was not someone who was regarded as an official leader, but he led from the bottom and literally changed the discussion in the fire service.
Yeah, and if you look at solid nozzles, there's so many advantages to them. I mean, you're dealing with lower pressures, so advancing hose lines around corners and so forth in a building is so much easier. You know, you got better reach, you got better penetration, you got better gallonage. You can blast ceiling tiles out like crazy with it, and it just has so many advantages versus when I came into the fire service in the mid-70s. It was, you know, get in there and use a fog nozzle, and it expands whatever, 270, 600, I can't remember which the expansion ratio of water is, but and you know, the steam is going to knock that fire down. Well, that's true in some conditions, but if you're in a closed area, it's not only knocking the fire down, it's knocking you down too, because, you know, you're losing all your thermal balance, your visibility. And if there's enough fire to heat that steam, you know, you guys have been there, your nose is on the carpet now. So
yeah,
I think he woke up a lot of people to those issues.
As international secretary, well, let's veer over to the Suncoast Fools for a minute.
Sure.
As I got to know you as in the secretary position, you would routinely send in membership applications on a fairly constant basis. Never a ton, but just a few. And one thing I began to notice a pattern over time that these were retired guys most of the time, and I was impressed by that because I realized that somebody down in Florida, where the old firefighters go from the East Coast,
is
gathering these guys up and honoring them. And I know that, you know, on the West Coast, we have a tendency to think that the brotherhood mantra, the brotherhood mindset was invented back East, and it comes from hard times. But I also know firefighters back East that didn't find any brotherhood in their job. And to hear what the fools do blows their mind. And my own uncle, who served 30 years in a department back East, said, if I had known guys like the fools, I would have stayed. And it that saddens me. And to see the Suncoast Fools grabbing guys and honoring their service, getting them into the Fools chapter down there for their last pitch, I think is an awesome thing. And I never talked to you about it. I always meant to when I was secretary. But if you could elaborate on that a little bit and tell me if I'm wrong, or tell me if it was just happenstance. But it seems like you intentionally did that, and that the president right now has continued that process.
Yeah, I was president for six of those years, and before that was Jerry Jensen, and then we had Barney was the president for a while, I think we did that consciously. Of course, it helps when you're in an area where there's a great deal of retired firefighters from all over New York City and Long Island and Baltimore and around the Washington, D.C. area and so forth, mainly. A couple guys in Chicago, Ohio is another big one. And so I think that we had something to offer some of these guys that either they didn't have on the job or that they missed on the job. So the guys from FDNY, all them guys that I know probably 50 FDNY retirees, and they all had it, you know. That department had it and probably still has it. You know, Baltimore and Philly and these more urban departments, Camden, a bunch of guys from Camden, they all had it. And I think that when they left the job and they found us, they're like, holy crap, man, these guys are really into the brotherhood and keeping things going. And I think that was attractive to them. So, yeah, our chapter in general, I think we consciously tried to, certainly any retired firefighter that we met in a bar or restaurant or wherever, we'd throw them a card and say, you know, check us out. And you know how us firefighters are. I mean, I was just at a little music thing up in the hills here in a little town called Hanging Dog, North Carolina, just on Saturday, and I had a fire department shirt on, and hell, I had three guys come up to me and say, you know, hey, where were you on the job, you know? So that's just the way we are, and guys like that, if I was in Florida, I'd be like, you know, hey, here's my card, man. If you ever want to get together, we have this organization called the Fools, and we try to – well, the other thing we did, you know, we did great things with scholarships for fire academies, so we do that, and I just think they really – They missed it, and we provided that for them when they were down in Florida, retired and looking around, going, "What the hell am I going to do down here?" You know.
Yeah, well, I think one of the reasons I find that to be so outstanding is because I'm about 5 years away from retirement. To meet the benchmark I want, I could retire right now, but I'm already aware of a sense of disorganization in my head. I've done this for 30 years now, and I wonder what am I going to be like? Because already when I get off duty, I'm kind of a basket case, and I pace the house, stare out the window a lot. And I imagine, I know in talking to other fools and other firefighters that is a classic symptom at a certain point. And I don't think it's PTSD. I think it's an overload of all the things we deal with, whether it's the calls we run on or just the routine that we're used to, or the adrenaline that has hammered our body for years, or whatever aspect of the fire service. You do it long enough, you become ingrained in it. And the fact that you would offer them a place to go and a place to feel normal and comfortable, because I don't know about you, but having a conversation with someone that's not in the fire service has been difficult for me for a very long time. And I kind of just, I'm patient with them as they, you know, talk about whatever. And I just think I got nothing to give you. I don't know what to say to you. And, right. Do you experience that?
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, I'll tell you, though, the guys that just really are into it and just miss it so badly are the FDNY guys, man. Above everybody, those guys, man, had it dialed in. And one of them who was so into the job, and I just loved the guy. And he was in Rescue 2 for 20 years. He was the senior man there. Never became an officer. He was a badass ghetto firefighter in Brooklyn at Rescue 2, and God bless him, he died. Let's see, we're in June here. He died about 6 weeks ago, but him and another one that was with our group, Garrett Lindgren, man, they were lost without having their FDNY shift and brothers and so forth. They were seriously lost, and they just came into our group, and just, of course, they made our group a much better place, and it just really, really offered them something. It really, really did, and they loved it, and God bless them. Garrett is a good buddy, and his dad retired from FDNY, and Garrett was with Rescue 3 for years. Again, just a firefighter, which is nothing wrong with that. And so, yeah, these guys were definitely into it, and we had something to offer them that they really liked, and they contributed to us and made us better. So it's a good deal all the way around.
I can't tell you how much I admire that. We try up here at Farmers Pools. I mean that wholeheartedly. We try up here at Farmers Pools to keep track of the older firefighters in our community, and most of the guys drift south as soon as they retire. But there are a few hanging around, and we have some that have been with us. They were retired when we formed the chapter, and they're moving on in years. But the pace of modern life is so intense. It's not long before you're forgotten. And I think it's so important that we remember those who have served in our presence. And I'm grateful to you for doing that.
Well, thank you. It wasn't just me. It was our group. Absolutely.
Well, and please extend that to the Suncoast Schools. I should do that myself as well, but hearing it from you as well would go a long way.
I'll put the link, this podcast, I guess, gets posted on the site.
Yeah.
And then I'll put the link to our members, and they can listen to it and hear you praise them for the work they've done. So that's great. I mean, we even had one of our firefighters that he had a Doberman dog that he used to take in the nursing homes just to pep up the old folks, and he found this guy, Wally something. I can't remember his last name. He's on our in memorandum, Suncoast Fools in memory page. Name was, I think his name was Wally Allen. And this dude was in the nursing home, and he was a retired Chicago firefighter. And so my friend who just happened to meet him in a nursing home, took him an application and signed him up. And Wally was a member, never attended a meeting, but our friend would go over and talk to him about the fire service and stuff. And that's just priceless to be able to, that makes both people feel really good, the person doing it and the person receiving it. So it's good stuff.
Good stuff is an understatement in my book. I'm pretty much speechless about it. It means a lot to me that you guys do that. That's one of the things, as I sat down and thought about what questions I wanted to ask you. The other questions were important, but this one is probably, having you explain that unique aspect of your chapter rapidly became the most important one because of what it means. And I just admire that so much.
Well, thank you. And we're really good on that end, which is the retired end. And we're really good on the other end, which is we used to do two or three scholarships a year for recruits in the academy. So that was we'd raise money and then we'd use it to do that. And who do you think would want to go and give the scholarship award to these new recruits?
The
FDNY guys, Richie and Garrett. And, they loved it, man. They still do love it. Our chapter's been on a little hiatus between COVID and our president, Ryan Callaher, is raising a couple teenagers. So we've been on hiatus for a couple years here, but every time I go down to Florida, we have a little gathering. So we're still kind of chugging along there, and it's all good, man.
Absolutely. That takes us to our next question. I wanted to ask you, based on a lot of feedback and discussion with Fools chapters and just as secretary for so many years, I watched the chapters come in, and one of the first questions was, how do we get up and running and make a training name for ourselves? And that kind of, while I enjoy the enthusiasm about training, and it certainly is a part of our mission statement, it saddened me in a way because I was secretary long enough to watch chapters come and go. And the chapters that focused on making a training name for themselves really didn't know they don't know how to hold themselves together when the chips are down and there's nothing going on with training, or their training plans failed. And so I lean very heavily towards the fraternal aspect of our organization. And the idea, I've told the story before of sitting on the curb with Mike Dugan the first time I met him, not really understanding who he was, and sharing some whiskey with him as he remembered the people he'd lost in 9/11. And and he turned to me and he goes, he was drunk, so I would never try to, you know, get a cup of coffee off him for this. But he said, "I love you, kid." And I said, "Cap, you don't even know who I am." And he goes, "Yes, I do. You're that guy from Alaska, and you flew all that way to come to the convention and spend time with
right.
us. And you're sharing my whiskey at this moment." And I realized that was, I think, the moment that I really realized the power of the fools. And so I'm a big believer in the brotherhood and our ability to fold the sisters in and just love on each other and heal some of the damage over the years. And so what my question is, what do you think makes a good, what do you think makes a Fool's Chapter successful in the long run? And is it a great training platform, or is it a focus on the fraternal aspects, or is it just having a strong e-board that cranks out the business? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think all three are important. You got to have a strong executive board to keep things rolling along and keep people interested, which is very tough. You know, like I said, I was president for 6 years, and, you know, we go to a meeting and have eight guys, you know, and then it's like, well, why where's everybody at? You know, why aren't they coming to the meeting, or is it the day of the week or the shift? And then other times we'd have 50 or 60, you know, so that's part of it. And certainly we've already talked a little bit or quite a bit about the fraternal side of things, which was really attractive to a lot of people. And actually, our chapter was formed in May of 2001. So, you know, everything's measured by the date of 9/11, 2001.
Yeah.
So we had about 150 members on board before September, even, because it's just something that people wanted to be part of the club, the brotherhood. And so we had each executive board member say they're going to, you know, get a dozen people on board within the next 2 months from us forming. And so we had a bunch of people on board. And then when 9/11 went down, then it was like crazy. Like everybody kind of realized, like, holy shit, you know, this is what could happen. And so we really shot up in our numbers because of 9/11, because people wanted to be part of the love and the brother sisterhood of the fools and so forth. So the fraternal part of it is definitely there. Now, our chapter, our business plan, if you will, for lack of a better term, was to hold training seminars. And that's, we probably held 30 training seminars over the years with everybody from Bill Gustin to John Norman to a couple guys out of the Baltimore area, can't recall his name, but a couple guys that, you know, that most of us have not heard of, but they were very good instructors. And so we did that, and that certainly kept people interested. Now, firefighters have changed. I still teach nationally, different areas, and firefighters have changed. Back in my day, you know, to go to an 8-hour seminar, you know, I'd pay a buck out of my pocket to go and learn something cool, something different. And now it's like you pretty much a lot of the folks nowadays, it seems like a big deal for them to go to classes anymore. But our chapter did a lot of seminars with some very good instructors. And so that was a big part of our chapter. And I think most of the people that are involved with the Suncoast Fools are definitely into training. And so that was a big part of it. So I think you hit on all three of them. I think they're all very important to have a successful chapter. But, man, it's tough to keep people going. As everyone knows, you know, there's, you know, 10% of us that really keep things going and in most organizations. So that's what I think.
Absolutely. I used to tell new chapters, I'd say, form your e-board carefully and take your time doing it, because there's the fools are the 10% of the fire service, or the 20%, some folks say. And within each fool chapter, there's 1%. And the 1% keep things running, and the 1% burn out, and they have to pass it off to another 1%er. And somewhere in that 20%, you got to find that 1%er who's waiting to do that. And that's having been president of Far North Fools for 10 years, and then on the e-board, and the minute I became president of the International, I began looking to find a replacement, which I can tell is going to take me well into the next century or something. But that's what it's all about in leadership, and I thrive on that. You mentioned that firefighters have changed, and my last question for you is, as the American society and American fire service continues to change, where your individual path is more important than the greater good. What do you think our role as fools has become? I look at that message that our young people are being hit with all the time, and I fight every day in the firehouse to say, no, you are not more important than the greater good that we are doing here as an organization. Yes, you need to tend to your career, and yes, you need to seek out what will give you satisfaction in your career, but set yourself aside and serve the people. And it's becoming a cymbal banging in a very empty room. And I just wanted to hear what your thoughts. How can the fools adapt, roll over, and make a difference in this newer environment we find ourselves in?
Yeah, well, that's a tough one there, and I'll try to muddle my way through it, but just kind of thinking for a second here. It is tough, and we've experienced it certainly in our chapter, as I mentioned earlier, over the years of trying to keep people involved and provide them with something that's of worth to them. And man, I'll tell you, it just has to go back to that whole fraternal organization. And I think a great example of that was what I just mentioned about after 9/11, people woke up, man. And of course, then a lot of them forgot. But it showed that people want to have that. I mean, it's really the same reason why inner city kids join a gang, right? They want to be part of the club. They want to be loved, and they want to be part of that, you know, deal. And so, as far as Fools International and the individual chapters, you know, trying to offer firefighters of today and what they need, you know, some of them you're not ever going to reach, because some of them it's just a job, unfortunately. And of course, we know the ones that feel it's a calling are the ones that we relate to more. And not everybody's like that, you know. I mean, my son's in the fire service. He's been there 20 years in Sarasota, and you know, he's not as jacked as I am about things. He's got his own experiences, and he's looking to retire when he's 45 years old, which is awesome. But, you know, it's because their organization there is different in Sarasota. It's more based on EMS and medical, which it has to be. That's where their calls are. But they don't make a whole lot of the whole brotherhood, sisterhood thing, except at certain stations like Station 1, which he was there for 12 years. But I'll tell you, in our department, 30 years for Cedar Hammock Fire Rescue in Bradenton, Florida. It's a great little place. And we had an asshole fire chief for years. And we got a new fire chief in right before 9/11. His name was Randy Stolce. He came to us from Sarasota Fire. And he changed the whole look to that organization. And it wasn't anything magical that, you know, he didn't have a magic wand. It's just his whole outlook on things changed that organization. So I guess just to kind of summarize, you know, we got to have leadership in the organization that is excited about the future and excited about what's going on in the fire service and in that particular organization. And I think without that, things are going to kind of die on the vine a little bit if we don't have those people that are hyped up about things and want to do great things. So I don't know if I hit your answer too well there, but that's just kind of thinking on my feet here.
I think you did. I know it was a deep question, and it is a question that is on my mind constantly. And so when I meet someone like you that's been in the chapter a long time, been in the organization a long time and has the history, and you were a witness to its early days, I like to pick your brain because, and I do it to Bart all the time, because I was a Marine. And the difference between Marines, in my opinion, and so many other organizations is Marines know their past. They know their heritage. They know their history in detail, and it's hammered mm-hmm. into them. And therefore, it's very hard for them to violate it. And of course, there's outliers, but in a tough fight, yeah. they're going to honor that tradition. And,
yeah.
and it's important to me that the fools carry on that fight. And I remember my first convention in Seattle, Bobby Halton gave a talk, and you know, Bobby can get pretty wound up. And he's intense. And he called us in that moment. He called us the warrior poets of the fire service. And I thought that is so appropriate because people have a hard time understanding the tangible nature of fraternal and brotherhood. And I'd like to include the sisters in that too. How do we fold them in and not stumble over that? And it's hard things to grasp, and so many people struggle with it. And when a chapter has failed to make a dent with training, they often fall apart. And I think of my own chapter, they've resisted the urge to be famous, and they've been content to serve the people of the area. And they do that through fraternity. And it's so important. I believe when all else fails, that's what you have left. And that's why the chapters were so explosive after 9/11, is because we all yeah. witnessed the most powerful act of love a firefighter can have. We witnessed it, and we couldn't help ourselves. And that may not happen again. You know, who knows? And God forbid that it does, because of the cost. But how do we carry on? And so as a president, that's my main focus, is giving the young generations coming in the tools they need to move forward. And, you know, stone-faced fools, I'll give a shout-out to them. They've hit it hard, and they're running fast. Old Town Fools and Diesel, and there's a bunch of them that are enthusiastic. They have young leadership. And having been secretary, I know what lies ahead when the babies come and the teenagers come, as you mentioned, for Ryan And it becomes very hard to keep that chapter alive. And yet I think the fire service, the fools have been so important to the fire service. I don't think anybody even understands how much of an impact the fools have made.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it, that you start out with this little organization and they have had a major impact. Your analogy there with the Marines is a good one. You know, you come from that and you see what they instilled in you, and you still have it, and that's, you know, that's a good experience to, for the position you're in with the fools, is to kind of take that same, those same methods of teaching the tradition and what it's all about to be a Marine, right? So
yeah.
Even to the point of, right, nobody calls themselves an ex-Marine, right? You're always a Marine, right? And
right.
That's just a good example, and that's a good analogy, because that's what it takes to keep this same type of organization, you know, going on. I mean, we're our own kind of warriors, you know, on the fire ground. I mean, it happens every day where guys are getting hurt, killed. I mean, God bless the fellow in Philadelphia that died the other day. But so anyway, you're a good man to be in the spot and just keep plugging along and encouraging them other chapters. And we're going to try to get ours up and going at full speed again, you know, now that things are kind of settled down. But it's all good, brother. It has made an impact on the fire service, and a positive one, and I'm proud to be part of it.
Amen to that. Questions? I don't think another question I could come up with would have the impact that Lee's already had. Is there anything you want to throw in there?
No, it's actually been really funny as you guys have been talking. It was funny that you brought up Stoneface Fools, because I've been going back and forth in the chat with one of the brothers from Stoneface, and he wanted to make sure I gave you a shout out from them to let you know that they're listening in from Rapid City, South Dakota. They're one of our newer chapters. But as you guys have been going back and forth, I've just been sitting here staring at my computer, just kind of bobbing my head, just agreeing with everything you guys are saying. the fraternal aspect of being in a chapter, I know that's gotten me through some fairly dark times in my career, and I think it's really what's helped get me to where I am today, not necessarily even with Fools International and my local chapter, but just my position in the fire service and what I've been able to give back. So, thank you very much for putting the time in to come up with some questions. Lee, thanks for spending the time with us.
If we got a couple of minutes, I got a short little story that goes along with this whole thing here.
I think we've got plenty of time yet. Go ahead.
We have all the time you need.
Right. So just think of this in bigger terms, and I think at least Ben has heard this, but think of this in bigger terms of the brotherhood, the fraternal aspect of things, and so forth. So let's go back to Andy Fredericks. So Andy got killed on 9/11. He must have been way up in them buildings, because his funeral was October 6th. So that was pretty soon that they found him. And from what I understand, he was fairly intact. Versus some members that they just found a little DNA or whatever, you know, 6 months later. So I went to Andy's funeral up in Suffern, New York, October 6th of 2001. I was with Mike Gilbert, Jerry Jensen, a couple other fellows, and it was in a little church there, and Diane Feldman, the number two person at Fire Engineering, had called me over and said, I want you to be inside, because you and Andy were pretty good buddies. So the church only held a couple hundred people, so there was 1,000 firefighters in the street. So I resisted that, and then she insisted, so I went in, and I heard Jerry Tracy give a eulogy to Andy and this and that. So it was a very impactful, powerful thing. And so after the service was over in the church. So they actually had a coffin and come out, and they put him in a hearse, and they went down a road and to the burial site, which us 1,000 firefighters in the street didn't go there. More of a family thing. So a couple years later, I was up in Tuxedo, Orange County there, same area, teaching for a guy named Mark Wesseldine, who he retired out of the Bronx. I think it was, I don't know the different engines, you know, 26 or 28 engine in the Bronx. And he knew Andy very well. They were very good friends. And so I was teaching up there, and I said, you know, since, you know, this is several years later after 9/11, I said, I'd like to see Andy's grave. So he says, well, you know where the church was? I said, yeah. He says, all right, well, did you see where the hearse went to the right and up the hill? I said, yeah, I saw where it went. And he says, well, if you just go up that hill a little ways, there's a cemetery up there. And he says, I think he told me, you turn right into the cemetery, and then you go up to this top of this other little hill. And he said, just look around, and you'll see Andy. And I said, what are you talking about, man? There's probably hundreds of gravestones in there or whatever. He says, all right. He says, look for the fire hydrant. I'm getting chills just telling this story. And so we go in there, and we go to the top of the little hill, and sure enough, Mark Wesseldine, New York City fire hydrant at Andy's feet. And it still gives me chills to remember seeing it. And again, just think of the bigger picture here. I'm not, you know, that's kind of a funny little story when you're talking about death, but the bigger picture is that, you know, what Mark Wesseldine did there, that is an act of love. And it shows, it's a symbol of what Andy was about. And I'm sure it's still there 20 years later. So God bless Andy. Mark is doing well. Mark's a chief out the other side of Denver. I just got back a couple months ago. I was out there teaching for him. And so he's doing real well. And God bless all the brothers from FDNY and everybody that was sickened or killed on 9/11. Just a terrible, terrible thing. But I'm very proud to have known Andy and have been a brother to him. So there you go, fellas.
And God bless.
Yep.
And God bless you, Lee, for being willing to talk with us about him. And I can't thank you enough. And I want to give a shout out to Ryan Kelleher. I've talked to him a few times, and he's leading a landmark organization, in my opinion. And yes, it goes through a season of difficult times and kind of a dispersion, but you guys have some incredible heritage, and I'm sure you'll get it back together. And
it's not dead by any means, and Ryan's an awesome dude, man.
Yes. I've never had the pleasure of meeting him, but the few conversations I had convinced me of that, no doubt. I got a little choked up listening to your story about Andy, even though I'd heard it at FDIC. I think one of the aspects of my experience is in Alaska, we felt so cut off from everything that was happening and that we could not convey strongly enough how important it was to us to pick up where the brothers left off in 9/11.
Yeah.
And it had an intense impact across Alaska, and particularly with Snowtown Fools and Farthest North Fools, we have carried that torch for a long time. And I just want to thank you for indulging us for an hour in your ability to tell us about our heritage and to share that with the fire service and with our brother and sister fools. And my hat is off to you, and I raise my glass in your honor, sir. I love you, and I can't wait till the next time we get to see each other.
Great. Looking forward to it, brothers.
Awesome.
Rich, is there anything else to shout out before we wrap up?
Just to wrap this up, our next Fire Engineering podcast through the Blog Talk Radio will be on August 8th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Central Time, or Eastern Standard Time. I'm in Central Time. One of these days I'm going to get this clock thing figured out.
Yeah.
We're always looking for someone to interview, a guest to have on. I have a list. And every once in a while, some things fall through. But if you're interested in being on the show, hosting the show, we're more than happy to run the board for you so that we can help facilitate that and help you get your message out as well. Make sure you look to the Brew City Fools website, Facebook page, our website at foolsinternational.com for information about the 2022 International Convention in September in Milwaukee. There's information on our website, their website, registration information, hotel information. On our website, there is also information on nominations for the awards, the five awards that we give out at the convention. So we're looking for nominations for that stuff as well. Otherwise, that's about all I have.
I may see you guys. I just ran across when I was looking up some stuff today for this podcast, and I saw the dates on that international there in Milwaukee. So I might see you brothers there. I'm going to be teaching in Warren, Michigan just before that, like right up leading up to that. So it's not that far away.
There's a couple of ferries that go right across the lake to get you over there in short order.
Seriously. Nice.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys know if I can lock that in. But I was talking to my wife Janet about it today, and said, "Man, I'm gonna be up there right there in Michigan. So what the hell?"
No, we'd love to see you.
We'd love that. Yeah, we would love to see you. And Chris and I always make a road trip out of anything we can. And if you need contact, I'm sure Chris knows somebody. And
absolutely,
somehow we can address any travel issue you might have. So please come if you can. We'd love to see you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I'm going to kick that idea around the next few days. I'll let you guys know.
Fantastic.
All right.
Go ahead, Ben.
Well, if there's anybody in the listening audience that is wondering why they should make an effort to go to yet another conference, yet another training session with the Fools, because you haven't really known the Fools until you've been immersed in their convention. So if you're a Fool out there in an active chapter and you want to get out and check out the pedigree of the fire service post 9/11 and the people that have changed the fire service, many of them will be there. I'd love to introduce you to them, and you should come and join us. I'd love to meet you, and I say that as president of the Fools International. So
it will change your career and recharge your batteries for sure. So I highly encourage anyone to attend, and I hope to see you there. I'll let you all know.
Yep, you'll be back once you come.
And Lee, what is your website so that people can check out your memorial page?
On Starfire TS, it stands for training system. Starfire TS .com is my website for training, and we do have a couple different pages on there. So check it out, and thank you very much for your opportunity to share some old stories and stuff.
Yeah, Lee. After we get off the show, shoot me over a link. I'll make sure I get it shared up on the international social media.
Okay, and of course, the suncoastfools.com is the Suncoast Fools website, and
right on.
And there's several pages there. People can read about the history and so forth. So thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks,
guys.
Okay, right, signing off, brothers.
All right.
Stay well.
See you next time. You too.